Well, welcome everyone. We're at session 352, Basketball Under the Steeple, The Strange Design of Mormon Chapels, by Tamara Taysom. This will be a 60-minute session, and be sure to silence cell phones. Not sure what else I should say. Tamara is an elementary school teacher in Midvale, Utah. She's currently pursuing a master's degree in colonial history at the University of Utah, where she is the president of Sunstone at the U. A returned missionary, she serves as the gospel doctrine teacher in her ward. Please welcome Tamara Taysom.
Well, I hope that doesn't go off when you said turn off your cell phones. I thought I should turn mine off, but it was off, so now it's back on. Okay, I was supposed to present this with this is my brother, Matt, and Seth Clark, who's an architect that I knew when I was living in Houston. He's an LDS person, and they both, at various stages of this, dropped out. So here I am by myself, and I am going to acknowledge their input for briefly, and then the rest of the I'm going to take credit for, and you just won't know which is which, and I don't really care. So this is Basketball Under the Steeple, The Strange Design of Mormon Chapels. And what I'd like us to consider here is that the design, given the theme of the conference and material culture and its relationship to religious matters, I thought that it would be good to talk about this thing that's bothered me for a long time, which is issues in LDS chapels, particularly the problem of how this is manifest in messages about gender and who matters. So this is what I'd like us to consider. The design, furnishings, and art of LDS chapels communicates subtle messages to members, this should say church, members of the church about who and what matters and who and what does not. The design, furnishings, and art of LDS chapels reflect a gender and, by extension, age bias inherent in the church. Now, when I say an age distinction, what I'm really talking about mostly is primary. And I really believe that part of the reason that primary suffers from some of the disadvantages of the way that chapels are designed comes from the fact that they really come under women as an organization. That's really a women's organization, even though you have priesthood boys in that organization. Now, you could argue this forever and say, you know, children are not valued, that's why they're turned to the women, or you could say the other way. It amounts to the same thing. So, the reason I bring up this age thing is because I'd like to talk quite a bit about primary today. This is a New Testament verse, and there's versions of this in other parts of the New Testament, but this is the one I'll use. My brethren, this is from James, have not faith in our Lord Jesus Christ and the Lord of glory with respect of persons. For if there come unto you your assembly a man with a gold ring and goodly apparel, and there come in also a poor man in vile raiment, and ye have respect to him that weareth the gay clothing, and say unto him, sit thou here in a good place, and say unto the poor, stand thou there, or sit there under my footstool. Are ye not then partial in yourselves, and are become judges of vile thoughts? I'd like to suggest that this is exactly what happens with the design of LDS buildings to some degree. So I've adjusted the scripture. My brethren, have not faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect of persons. For if there come unto your assembly a man, and there also come a woman or a child, and ye have respect of him that is a man, and say unto him, sit thou here in this spacious office with this big cushy chair behind this huge wooden desk, and feel free to play basketball whenever you want, no matter who else is using the gym or the adjoining rooms, and say unto the woman or the child, stand thou there, or come thou to this back room and pull out your own folding chair out of the closet, and don't bother sitting more. Are ye not then partial in yourselves, and become judges of evil thoughts? Now, my little version here is pretty harsh. But isn't this true, that primary sets up every week in most wards? When I worked in primary in one ward, we called somebody to set up the chairs. It was such a hassle. And there's a lot of chairs. The bishop never sets up chairs in his office. He may move them. Other people may move them for this meeting or that. But it is a set place. The furniture is not put away. And it is in primary. And in other organizations. So, okay, so this embodied some of the things that I'd like to hit and at least think about. How intentional is this? What problems does it create? And what can be done about it? Okay, so the first thing I want to talk about is the gym. The gym is called the gym. It is also called the cultural hall. In my estimation, that is a misnomer. It's a gym, first, that gets used for cultural events. It is not a cultural hall that gets used as a gym. If you don't believe that, then you haven't looked very hard at the gyms. The floor is a gym. The basketball hoops are there. They hang down. They are a constant problem with wedding receptions, which is I think, unforgivable. And when they are used for cultural events, or let's say, by the way, they aren't used for cultural events very much. Sometimes in the past we've used the stage, but mostly the stage is just the classroom for the class that doesn't have a classroom. And I teach gospel doctrine in my ward, and that's where we meet, on the stage. Just hope nobody falls off. And that's really what the stage is used for. And all along the walls, there are pipes, and, you know. The other gospel doctrine class meets in the reciting room, which we're going to get to in a minute. But it's kind of frustrating to think that, like, we're having class in the closet. The other thing is that if you're going to have a ward party, the gym is too big in most cases. And it really, I know a lot about children, and I know, especially in groups, and especially in big places, and I can tell you, high ceilings and extra space say to children, run now as fast as you can. And this is part of what happens in ward parties constantly. And I've been annoyed by this for quite a while, but my mother, who now, if she is knocked over, is going to break a bone, is to the place where she doesn't even feel like she can go to some of these things for the sake of her own health. She's going to be bowled over by a kid who is in a room that says to him, run around. And the other thing is that the cultural hall has to be set up to do a meal. The chairs have to be brought out, the tables have to be brought out, the tablecloths have to be brought out and arranged. This never has to happen if you're going to play basketball. Everything is put away, and it is always ready for basketball. All you need is a ball. And you can play. You don't have to haul the hoop out, and you don't have to, you know, none of that. If you're going to use it for any other event, you've got to pull out stuff and set it up, which stops us from doing it a lot of the time. So I would suggest that calling it a cultural hall is inaccurate and problematic. The other thing is that, and by the way, a little preview of this was published in the Salt Lake Tribune this week, and I got a lot of nasty comments in the blogs.
I saw that.
And so if you want some fuel against me, you just look at it, Salt Lake Tribune. but one of the big things, one of the things that I said to Peggy Fletcher Stack is that the gym isn't used on Sunday, and that I drew a lot of fire because everyone says it is used on Sunday, it's the open. Well, you're right about that, but I'm really troubled that the gym is an overflow space. I don't see why you can't have an overflow that's not a gym. And I also don't see why you can't have, why you have to have the gym and the chapel go together, I think this is silliness. And one of the problems is that sacred, it interferes as soon as those accordion doors go open, and this is to say nothing of how not sacred accordion doors are, you open up into a gym. I just can't imagine any other place where I was just thinking, watching the royal wedding this year, would the Westminster Abbey, would they open it up for overflow and it'd be a basketball court? And then they'd walk the heir to the King of England down, or to the throne of England down the... I mean, are you kidding? Are you kidding? But we do this every week in almost all of our buildings, and we never think twice about it. But what does happen is that the bishop, or this happens almost every week in my ward, brothers and sisters, this is a sacred space. Please do not have your conversations here. Please take them out in the foyer where we cannot all fit, and have your conversations out there. Well, there's two problems with this. One is, there is no room in the foyer to talk. You have two choices, stay in the chapel or go to the gym. I don't want to go to the gym on Sunday, personally. I don't want to go to the gym anytime, but I personally don't want to go on Sunday. So, and then I look around and I think, this is sacred space. Look right back there, there's a hoop. It's not being used as a hoop usually. Sometimes it is. But I really think that this issue of keeping that chapel proper to a sacred space, you've got to keep the gym out of it. And we don't. And then we wonder why people aren't reverent. I think this is critical to this issue. Personally, I don't think it's that big a deal to talk in the chapel. But it is sort of an issue that keeps creeping in, and there's a lot of people that make it their pet project. Oh, it's that gym right there. It just doesn't seem to quite work for me. Okay, the other thing is that gyms are really local. They're central in buildings, a lot of buildings. Now, if you went to Jonathan's, you could see that that's not true in a lot of buildings. It wasn't true in the building where I grew up. But it is more and more true, and in some of the blueprints that you put up, it's very obvious that the gym is right smack in the middle. I think that's symbolic, that the gym is what matters, and everything else is pushed to the periphery. And so, I'm going to talk about something that Seth says about this here, and then I'm going to try and remember to come back. Here's the gym. This is not a very good picture, but this is the gym in my home ward where I grew up in Bloomington, Indiana. And I love this because it says on the outside, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And right here it says Mormon, which I have to say I kind of like. But here's the stage. Look, all the crap is up there on the stage. It's the curtains are open. We can see all the stuff in the closet. You know, nobody thinks twice about it, except it bothers me. This is just a closer view. Here's the gym, the same gym where, you know, the accordion doors, where you open up on the other side of that is the chapel. And let me just go back to this. So, except for the issue of overflow, gyms are not necessary to the worship experience. You need a sacrament table. You need a pulpit, I think. You need... chairs, you need a place for people to sit down. You don't need a gym, but we seem to think that you do. And then the other problem with the gym is that, in my view, it takes up space that could be used for other things that are far more central to the gospel. Now, I personally just think we should take the gyms out completely. But at the very least, we should not marry the gym with the cultural hall. There are other ways to handle that. You can move the gym to the back. A lot of churches have the gym in the back. Methodists do. Other churches have the gym in a separate building or in a school that's attached to the church. So if you're going to have a gym, I really think that you ought to detach it from the chapel. Okay, now, I'm sorry, but I've mixed up some of these slides. This is what Seth wrote me in an email, because his issue is not the gym so much, but the connection of the gym to the chapel and what it does, what that does to the experience of what is sacred space, which is the chapel. This is what he says. The gym issue is part of what drives a lackluster chapel. By having such a large portion of space dedicated to a windowless room, this forces classrooms out, that should say to the perimeter, and creates a long hallway circuits that have become standard. The result is that the chapel also gets shunted to the center, which might make sense at one level. That's the overflow issue he's talking about. And it basically has only one exterior wall to have windows. In these designs that Jonathan was showing in his last session, there are no walls for exterior windows. Our religious experience has become a fluorescent one as a result, estranging Mormons from centuries of religious architecture precedent and the tradition of light as inspiration. In return, or trade, we get a clustering culture that clogs hallways and raises kids to think the church is one long racetrack to run around. Anybody who goes to a building like this will see this. So this is Seth's picture of a building in Brazil, and you can see two things here. One, windows on both sides, and two, overflow that is not a gym. What a concept. And the other thing is, I don't know what happens in everybody else's ward, but in my ward and every ward I've ever attended, the overflow only goes to a certain point. Every week it goes to that point, and in my ward it's about 5 rows into the gym. I'm not sure that we really need the overflow. If we closed it up and never opened it, I think those people, including me, who sit sort of back there, would find space in the benches. And in other words, I'm not convinced that every ward needs an overflow. I think we use it because it's there. I'm not sure that we always need it. And the other thing is, there's another easy solution to this. Well, it's not easy since all these buildings have been built, but you just put in more benches. Have a bigger chapel. And when it gets to, you know, the overflow gets to be too much, you split the ward. That's a little bit simplistic, I understand that, but I'm just trying to suggest other ways to think of overflow besides the gym. Okay, so so this issue of having what could we do if we had that space, or what else does a chapel need besides a gym? I believe that a chapel needs a real cultural hall, where furniture remains set up so that it is not such a hassle and we are more likely to use it for the real purpose of fellowship. Because I do think, some people say that, I know that this has already been an attack leveled at me about this, that basketball is fellowship. I don't deny that. It's not fellowship for me, but it is for a lot of people. But And I agree that fellowship is a primary purpose of the church. And those of us who are LDS, those of us who want to be part of a religious community, that is a legitimate concern. But basketball is the only way to fellowship. And there are lots of other ways. And if you had a real cultural hall, first of all, it wouldn't be as big as a gym, but it would be very big. And I went nosing around at some of the other churches in my hometown, Bloomington, this summer, and looked around at this Anglican church. It had the parish hall. I was going to put up a picture, but they didn't turn out. And then it had a hallway going from it didn't have a parish hall. It had sanctuary, what we would call the chapel, and then a hallway from the front of the sanctuary and a hallway from the back of the sanctuary to a hall. We would call it like multi-purpose room or something, but it was bigger. And inside, already set up, are all the chairs and the serving table, and just stay set up. And in between, there's a courtyard. What a great idea to put a courtyard there. And on nice days, you could have like a linger longer in the courtyard. And you could also have a linger longer on not-so-nice days in the parish hall. Well, I happened to run into a guy who goes to church there, and I said, this is so great to have your furniture all set up. And he said, actually, it's only set up in the warm months. In the cold months, we put all the furniture away and use it as a homeless shelter. Shame on us. I lived in Houston during Katrina when everybody just flowed in like you can't believe. And one of the places they were not welcome to go was LDS chapels. Can you think about how many people we could put on the floor of a gym?
Maybe.
A lot. But those things were locked up. So, you know, think about some of these other possibilities. What else could chapels be used for? Now, here I've got offices for female leaders, and I'm going to come back to that in a minute. Gospel doctrine rooms. I'm a lover of Sunday school. And I think Sunday school gets the chef. They get to use the Relief Society room, and then the other class has to use some other room. Like, my class uses the stage. I think it's awful. And think about the art that you could put on the wall in a gospel doctrine room. It would be great. And you could have nice chairs like these. Or, you know, these aren't, like, fantastic, but they're soft. And they're not folding metal chairs that have to be put away so you can vacuum. Okay, primary I'm going to talk about in a minute. Foyers I already sort of talked about. Storage space. I have to tell you, I was in the State Young Women's Presidency in Houston, and there were all of these, in all the wards and in the stake center, there were all of these closets dedicated to scout camping equipment. And you know where our camping equipment was?
In your garage.
It was in a lot of people's garage. Like, part of the job of the State Young Women's Presidency was to keep track of which tent was in whose garage. And periodically call them and say, please don't throw it out. We'll come and pick it up in May. That's ridiculous. And you know where my stuff was? My other stuff that wasn't camping stuff? In my car. You know where we met? In one of our homes. You know why? We had no office. We could have used a classroom, but you know what happens when you do that? Like, all evening. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were meeting in this room, and run off, and then 10 minutes later, the same thing, and the same thing, and the same thing. You want to have a meeting with any kind of peace and privacy, you need to be able to lock that door. And people need to know that you're in there and know to leave you alone. This doesn't happen to the bishop. Oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't know you were in here. Oh, I'm so sorry. Nobody does that to the bishop. But this is the experience of women presidencies all the time. And I would suggest that's silly. That could be changed and fairly easily, without even making a whole lot of changes to the architectural, basic architectural design. Okay, and then I talked about courtyards already. Okay, and I talked about this. And this. One line track. Okay, so now we're back to offices. So, have you ever thought that the only people who have office space in a chapel are men? They are the only ones. Now, that does not mean that all men have an office. I understand that. But if you're a woman, you plain aren't going to have an office. You're just not. The second thing I would suggest is that female leaders need offices, partly as a place to meet in private. Like I was illustrating a minute ago, this business of, I'm so sorry, I didn't know you were in here. When my mom was Relief Society president years ago, a woman left her husband, and he came to my mom and said, I'm broken up. I need to talk. She said, I think you should go talk to the bishop. I can't believe my mom said that. She would normally not say that. I think you need to talk to a male priesthood leader. She doesn't feel like that. But in this case, she said, don't you feel like you need to talk to the bishop? He said, no, I want to talk to you so that I can understand better what happened with my wife. And the bishop doesn't know. He's even told me he doesn't know. Where are they going to go? There's nowhere to go unless we just go in a little classroom and, oh, whoops, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were meeting in here. Okay, the number of offices in chapels versus the number of other facilities. Now, This is an extreme here, but it did happen and nobody did anything about it. This is a Houston experience when I was in the Stake Young Women's Presidency. Houston LDS membership is growing quite fast. And it's growing faster than they can get the chapels up. And they even said, I don't know if this is true, but people said, okay, you got a temple, you've got to make do with the chapels. People thought that that's what Salt Lake was saying. Maybe they were, I don't know. But anyway, facilities, word of mean on Sunday was getting to be a major problem in Houston chapels. And in the ward that I was meeting in, the young women in my ward were already in one room. They could not split up into three classes after a little opening exercise like you're supposed to, because they already only had one room. Then they said, okay, we're going to move this other ward in, and you're all going to share the space together. So they took the young women, and they moved them into an even smaller room where they couldn't all get in, and changed all of that space into offices. They came in with their wood and their nice furniture and their nice carpet, and they built offices for the bishop and his clerks of the incoming ward. Young women were out. When I went and visited them, there was no place for me to sit, let alone, and they had young women on the floor. And it wasn't a giant ward, but they were closed into this, and they couldn't split up. They couldn't even all have their meetings, and nobody cared. But that bishop is going to have an office. Sorry. And so are his clerks. I think that is a gender bias, that we are sure that that bishop is going to get an office. But the young women, well, I'm sorry. Just make do. What bothers me more than that it happened was that it didn't seem to bother anybody else, or that nobody else seemed to bring it up. And so what kind of message are we sending to those young women? You don't matter. Those men do. You don't. I think that's a message that you could get if you were in that ward and a young woman in that ward. Young woman in that ward. Okay, now the other thing is the size of the office compared to the size of other rooms in the building, and I hope I have a thing. Okay, so this is from a different email from Seth. He says, to add fuel to your feminist flame, consider that each of these new giant stake centers, there is a separate office for each bishop, plus another for his clerks, but there is often only one mother's lounge. Do the math. Mothers complain that on any given Sunday, there are mothers literally calling on top of each other, packed inside of a small room, trying to feed their babies, while others are changing them at the same time. The smell can be overwhelming. Yet, bishops and stake presidencies have enormous offices, used most often by only two people. Now, I know that there are ward councils held in bishops' offices, but it doesn't have to be held in them. And most of the time, there's only two people, or three. Clerks have large offices with filing cabinets for increasingly obsolete records as we abandon the age of paper. My goodness, I'm sorry, I didn't edit this very well. It's all gone to computer now. Why couldn't they share an office? And by the way, why couldn't the bishops share an office? One solution to this ward council thing is, I think, to have a conference room that is available for ward council and other ward meetings, ward leadership meetings. And when they go in there, and it can have a lock on the door. And why can't the bishop's office be very, very small? I think that's reasonable, considering the use that it gets. All right, now, here's the big thing I want to talk about, primary. Okay. I have only seen two buildings in my lifetime that where primary is set up in a way that facilitates primary. One of them is the ward I'm in the 33rd Ward on 11th East in Salt Lake, 11th East in 5th South. And the other one is the ward that I was in when I was growing up in Bloomington, although that ward is... Both of these wards have primary sort of... They had sort of a suite where they sort of had control of a certain part of the building, and they had their own meeting room, and they could switch the classes without running in to other people. And this is really important in primary because primary does a lot of switching. And here's what happens. The older primary, senior primary, gets out of their classes. They're going into the singing room, the main assembly room. The younger primary isn't out. So what do the older kids do? They have to wait outside. Well, it's not going to kill them. I'm not suggesting that. But I watched my sister do this a couple of weeks ago this summer. She's in a primary presidency. She was magnificent. She walks around, how are you doing? She talks. She gets to know them. She uses that time. All the time that she's trying to talk to these kids, get to know them, how's your dog, this and that, she can't even hear what they say, or nor they hear what she said. You know why? Because the other ward is all over the place. And actually, their own ward. And also, daddy came by. Oh, daddy, daddy. And it's a mess. Primary needs a place where it can move the kids back and forth without bumping into somebody else, bumping into somebody who... You just got that kid used to primary and not bawling all the time, and now mom has no way to get past except to go walking all the way around or walk past, and maybe the kid goes to crying again. The other thing is, we have all of this business about this is the Lord's house and we're going to be very nice and we're not going to talk in the hallways unless it's in between and unless we need to and unless and unless and unless. And really what kids witness during switches of primary is people breaking all the rules that are being taught in primary. Not all of the rules, but a lot of them. Now, that's to say that reverence is all wrapped up with quietness, which I don't necessarily believe is true, but there are people that believe that. And at the very least, kids do need to learn how to be quiet for a time, at certain times. And I think that we're giving them mixed messages by not allowing primary to have its own space. And by the way, we had a real problem in Houston in the primary where the kids would just come tearing into the room and then never get them settled down again. Well, look, as a teacher, I know what you do in that situation. You could take everybody out of the room and we start again. You'd have a little lecture in the hallway and now we're going to go in quietly and everybody's going to sit. And then if we can't do it, we're going to go out again. Well, that's really, really difficult if you don't have a hallway that's free. So I think that, you know, the people that set up primary rooms haven't worked with large groups of children. That's what I think. Okay, the other thing is nicer furniture. Now, this is a big issue because kids are hard on furniture. And I recognize that. But let's look at this for a second. This is a chair that could very easily, typically, be used in primary. This is a chair that's typically used in other classrooms in the church. This is a chair that you would find in a bishop's office. And, oops, and that's the bishop's chair. Hmm. Now, who matters? Is it the person that sits here? Or is it the person who sits here? I think this communicates that you don't matter as much as the person who sits here. Why can't the bishop sit there? I recognize that some bishops do in their offices. But typically a bishop's office has chairs like this and like this. And primary has chairs that look like this and are stacked afterwards and put aside. These chairs are never put aside. Okay. Bathrooms. Primary needs their own bathrooms.
Child-sized toilets.
Yes, with child-sized toilets. How many of you have done this? Okay, are you done now? Ugh. Yeah, this is a big issue. Honestly, I think this is actually a financial issue for the church as the church gets targeted for child molesting cases. There was an incident in Houston. I don't know too much about it, but we did get some bits and pieces. And really what it comes down to is kids are sharing bathrooms with adults. I'm telling you what, in my school, I don't do this. I don't go in the bathrooms where kids are, and they don't come in my bathroom. I think that's a wise policy. Here's another thing. Primary rooms don't have locks on the doors, generally. And you know what happens after sacrament meeting in most wards? There is a race to primary to get there before the leaders so you can tear it up. And by the way, the leaders, if there's nobody to set up primary, one of them might already be down there setting it up. So they're missing sacrament meeting. I think you need at the very least to have locks on the doors so you can say, this is how we're going into the room. Kids go into primary rooms all the time in a way we would never allow them to do in a chapel. But part of the reason that we do that is that they're free to do it. And they're unsupervised during this small part. And you spend a lot of the rest of primary getting them settled down from that. Okay, the next thing is, I think primary needs its own library and storage space, and I think they need a copier in there, that does not belong to anybody else. It belongs only to primary. And if you need to make copies, you do it in the ward library, or you do it at, FedEx before you get here, because you're not using the primary copier. Now, that sounds selfish, but the primary doesn't have enough room. We had one closet in Houston. That's fairly typical. There's a lot, and by the way, how do you know who the primary people are? They come in with a load of junk, because they got to bring it all. There's no place to store it. The other thing is, I think the primary needs an office. I think the primary president and her counselors need to be able to pull in a child into an office space. It doesn't have to be a big office. It can be a small office, and say in private to this child, you're done acting like this in primary. It's over. Primary leaders have nowhere to take a child to do this. All the classrooms are being used in most cases. The hallway is public. The assembly room is always being used. Another thing is that kids have other problems besides acting up. How about, I love to see the temple, and this kid comes from a family that, a single parent home. Don't you think it would be good if you could pull that child in and say, sweetheart, I know this is hard, but, to address that, I think it would happen if there was a place for it to happen. I really do. I think primary leaders are sensitive to these things, and they would attend to them more if they had the space. But they need the space. Okay. All right, now, in all of my ranting about gender roles and the, not gender roles, but the messages that members of the church get about gender by how chapels are set up, there is one huge exception, is the Relief Society room. Now, the Relief Society room in every chapel I've ever been is a very nice room. It's often plushly carpeted. It has nice chairs, often nicer than these. Really nice. It often has artwork. The artwork has been done by women in ward, or they have been chosen by the Relief Society president. It's framed. It's permanent art. It isn't a poster. It's art, and it's up on the wall, and there are nice curtains. The whole nine yards. Relief Society rooms are nice rooms. Now, I don't know the history of how this happened, but I know that this has happened. And you would not come into a Relief Society room and say, you Relief Society people go up on the stage and we're building offices here. You couldn't get away with it. You might kick the young women out, you might kick the young men out, but you would not kick Relief Society out. So what I'm suggesting here is the Relief Society has a situation that the other organizations need. They also need a room that is known as the Gospel Doctrine Room. And you can tell by going in, because it has Gospel Doctrine things up, permanent art, nice furniture. You can do this with the Young Women's Room. And a lot of Young Women's Rooms that I've seen have a lot of, you can tell Young Women's Room in churches these days. But what do they have up? Posters. Now, the argument there is, well, they're teenagers and blah, 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 and I can see that. But posters are easily removed, and then you just build a bishop's office right there. But if you had permanent art with nice chairs that were, heaven forbid, like pretty, even pink colors, okay, that's an issue we could go on about. But what I'm saying is, why can't we build a room for the young women that when you walk in, you go, oh, this is the young women's room? If we had a room like that, we would communicate to the young women, you matter. You matter enough for us to buy these nice chairs for you. And we bought this nice art for you, with you in mind. I think that sends a different message. I don't personally see why I can't do it for the young women, the elders quorum. By the way, I was talking to somebody about this week. They said, the elders quorum really needs like storage space. They don't have any storage space for their, you know, dollies, because they have to move everybody. And so they really need that. And why can't you have an elders quorum room with storage space? And, you know, if you're in a ward where you do a lot of moving, then you keep that or whatever else. Whatever you need. You have room for that. Now, as far as the high priests are concerned, I think they should have a room too. But I do have to say that we have a saying in our family that if the high priests gripe that they don't have a room, that's a little bit like Brigham Young saying that he doesn't have a building on the BYU campus named after him. You know, that's the way I feel a little bit about this. But at the same time, I don't see why the high priest can't have a room of their own. You walk in, this is the high priest's room. I think that's fine. I think it would be great. And you could do things that would protect that room for that organization. And that's what I would really like to see. And communicate that these people who meet here matter in the church. All right, now I'm just going to finish up here really quickly, and I'm just going to throw this out really quick because this is Matt's part of the presentation, and he didn't make it. So there is the issue of local materials and the experience of building chapels, and we had in the ward where I grew up a town next to us that was a very poor, struggling town, and they built a little branch chapel out there when I was just barely in young women's. We used to go out there and build. Well, we didn't build. We sanded the, you know, sheetrock, or I don't really even know what we did. But I was part of it. And I always cared about the Spencer Branch because I had helped build their chapel. It mattered. Now, I know we've got all kinds of issues with codes and lawsuits and this and that, but I do think it's worth saying that local input and local building makes a difference in tying you to the gospel. Okay, now this is one that Jonathan showed. These are just some buildings that are around the Salt Lake Valley. I don't even know as much about them as Jonathan did for his presentation, so I'm just going to go through them kind of quickly just to show the local marks. But see, the question here is, do the local people matter in building a building, or do they not? I think these people did. And Jonathan showed this, and I think this is a great, really interesting architecture, but here's something he didn't show. That's the Relief Society building of the same ward. Now, this is a little troubling, because on the one hand, the Relief Society, well, they're over there in that other building, but on the other hand, I can kind of see standing in the door and saying, I'm sorry, you're not part of the Relief Society, get out. There'd be a lot of autonomy in a setup like this. And to be honest, this was built in a time when Relief Society had far more autonomy than it does. So I think this is a really interesting thing. This is another shot of the same thing, Relief Society building and the chapel. This is another building over right just immediately south of the Capitol. And this is another Salt Lake building. I'm going to go through these kind of quickly. This one is a lot more interesting inside. But I don't have pictures of those, of that. And this is a granite tabernacle, and my brother took this picture, but we don't see any granite in it at all. And that's mostly the way we put it in, is because it's the granite tabernacle that's made out of brick. But it was really fun to drive around with my brother and do this, because he doesn't live here, so he was visiting me, and we drove around to just places that I'd noticed, and he'd jump out and take pictures with his new iPhone. This is right by the University of Utah. It even says, if you get close enough, the University Ward. This is the site of it. All right, and I'm going to end with this. This is the first chapel in Bloomington, Indiana, where I was raised, and also Alethea, who's here. We grew up in this building, and it's made of limestone. It was built in, I think, 62, a couple of years before my parents arrived, and it's made out of Indiana limestone. And it was a fight between Salt Lake and Hoosier church leaders whether it would be made out of Indiana limestone or Utah brick. Guess what? The Hoosiers won. And there was, for a lot of the time that I was growing up, a tree right there. And one day, I remember my mom came home. She was in some meeting. She got privy to something that they were going to have to cut down that tree because the roots were causing problems in the foundation of the chapel. I just sat and sobbed. I was really attached to that tree. And the truth is, I'm attached to this building. And this is one of the things that this is how I want to end. I want to emphasize that for all of these problems that I've gone through, and this chapel has them like every other chapel, this is the chapel of my childhood. And if anything happened to it, if it burned, I would be devastated. I'm tied to this building and its dumb Indiana limestone, because there are so many memories there. And it's a very powerful tie to the church. For me, this building is, and it's not really that spectacular. But I lived there. I grew up there. I learned the gospel there. And when I go home, I go to church there. And it does matter. And I think we would be wise to pay attention to how these things are built. And remember that people do get attached to them. And they want them to get attached to their own place in the gospel. And you want that to be not under the footstool. You want people to be in it and feel good there. And I think that the LDS chapels need some adjusting in that regard. And that's all. Thanks. Okay, so if you have questions or comments, yeah. Or disagreements, just be nice. I just have to have people be there.
When my husband and I were first married, we attended church in an inner city branch in Portland. There is one. And it was then at the Institute building in Portland State University. And it had a multi-purpose room that was used as a gym. And it had two basketball hoops, even though it wasn't a very large room. And the basketball hoop on one side was kind of stationary. And the basketball hoop on the other side, for Sundays, folded up, and they had these wood paneled kind of sliding doors that closed in front of it, but the hoop stuck out. But about 15 feet high.
Uh-huh.
So I always joke that we attended church at Our Lady of the Elevated Hoop.
Yes! Excellent!
And they've since remodeled the building and given up on it ever working as a gym. It was carpeted.
Right.
So
yeah.
They've just taken out the hoops altogether, and they put in a permanent little stand place, you know, with ramps to make it ADA appropriate and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I also want to say, I now attend church in a non-standard building that was built, it was member funded. It was built in the early 1960s. And it's the Beaverton Stake Center. It's rumored to be the largest building in the church.
No kidding.
And it got to a point where the church at that time funded percentage of the building fund, and then the local members would pay the rest. The church cut them off after a certain point, and they kept going with entirely their own funds.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
My building has a chapel with tinted pebbled glass along one whole side of the wall. It's very early 60s.
It's pastel
tinted rectangles. And the walls are clear, straight grain Douglas fir, all the way up.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Which is a local material.
Yes, see?
And then the scout room, oh, it's not an oval, it's not a racing track, but
uh-huh.
It has wings. It's two-story.
Yeah.
Underneath the full-size maple floor gymnasium is a banquet hall with a gigantic commercial kitchen off of it. No longer a commercial kitchen. We used to have a commercial dishwasher and everything.
Until
the church put the kibosh on all that.
Right.
It has a separate baptismal room, a women's room, Relief Society room, scout room, family history center, employment center.
She's trying to make everybody jealous.
Yeah. It's working.
And they do not build buildings like this anymore. They do not. And our building is so well used.
Yeah.
There's so much room for everyone to do something there, even at the same time.
Yes, right.
Oh, we also have a scout room that has a member-made floor that's inlaid thunder eggs.
It's what?
Volcanic thunder eggs.
With the
crystals inside. All cut. Everyone brought in their thunder eggs and they made it on the floor. Mm-hmm. And it has a fireplace, a working fireplace.
See, mine has a fireplace. I sit by it every week. Facing this way, the fireplace is this way, the pulpit's that way. It's not really.
So, did you talk about the kitchens at all?
I didn't talk about the kitchens.
Because how frustrating is it that we're not supposed to use them anymore?
I know. But the gym gets used.
We do it anyway. But, you know, like, we're. Why do we have the kitchen?
We have 300 plates.
It's a server.
Serving area, they call it.
Yeah.
It's.
Talk about a waste room that could be going towards the homeless.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So I have a question about the gyms, like the aesthetics aside.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there something kind of beautiful, like for LDS theology to be like, we have a gym, but we use it as a chapel. Like there's no distinction between the temporal and the spiritual. And I wonder because growing up, like the be reverent in the chapel, I don't remember ever getting that speech. And that might have been like some weird local leadership thing. But that seems to be something that's a more recent idea.
It's been my experience is more recent. But I've experienced it in almost every ward I've lived in since my mission.
So I wonder, would you be more comfortable if we got rid of the, like, let's be reverent in the chapel, let's have a more, and it still is a gym, or do you just not like it? Do you just not like it because of other things?
I just don't like the gym. I don't, personally. But I could live with the gym being separated from the chapel. I could live with it. We could put it somewhere else.
Ours is so big we never have to use the chapel for overflow except for state conference. Yeah.
See?
It's giant.
Yeah, and actually Seth brought up this issue of state conference because that is what are you going to do? Well, he brings up this issue, and I think it's actually worth thinking about. We film it anyway into other rooms. I mean, you can't fit even with the overflow. You still are back in the primary room and blah, 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 you know, and not just the crying babies. I think you have an interesting point. However, what about why basketball over football or track or, I mean, why does it have to be basketball? Yeah.
I just returned from my mission in Thailand, and they're building a brand new chapel there. It's the biggest chapel in the country. It's going to be the biggest chapel in Southeast Asia, and it's actually not a basketball court. It's a badminton court.
Okay. Now that's, yes, exactly. Now you've got local stuff. Yeah.
I was going to say, that reminds me, because I think that they've had some experiences with that. My Chelsea Slayer, she goes to church in Ghana a lot, and she says that they built a basketball in Ghana. Nobody plays basketball. Nobody has a basketball.
Right.
And I think that getting the feedback from those experiences might be what's leading to a badminton. Because they could have used a soccer field.
They do have in Ghana. The state president was given funding for music for the state center in Ghana. And he did not buy an organ. He bought drums.
Nice.
Oh, see. Okay, now we're getting into all kinds of other issues. But this is all central to the experience of church. Yeah.
So I work at and go to the Unitarian Church in Cheyenne.
Uh-huh.
And so my office upstairs is the old bishop's office, which I like. But
the
it's
old
LDS ward house.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Sorry. So I should say, and so we have, you know, the gym, cultural hall. We have, I mean, it's an LDS ward house.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting that people who visit and come and say, oh, this is so Unitarian, having a gym. It's really not. It's like very Mormon. But it's funny, like, my friends who've come who were raised in that ward, you know, back when it was, you know, Mormon. And now, you know, of course, the Unitarians have, like, bedazzled it. And when in the chapel, instead of having window coverings, these local artists, two Unitarian women, did these silk paintings of the different, you know, traditions that Unitarians draw. And so there's like a Wiccan, you know, pentagram. There's a David's, you know, man, you know, the humanist sort of. There's a Islamic, you know, crescent. And they're like, that is really weird. Seeing in my old chapel. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. It's yeah. And you can see
how much coffee we have in the church.
Oh. Well, I mean, I would die. I would just die. I would try not to, but
yeah. Well, Lisa
it would be
came
really
and,
hard.
And Lisa came and BBCS came, and they'd never occurred to me, but just like when they walked in and said, like, that is very weird seeing a coffee pot there. Like,
yeah,
this
yeah.
is like surreal for me.
Yeah.
I grew up in a turn of the century ward house,
uh-huh.
and it didn't. I hadn't really thought. This has made me think a lot.
Yeah,
but I hadn't really thought about it. But when I became a teenager, they had to build a new ward house, and it was one of these racetrack ward houses.
Uh-huh.
And I do not feel connected to that ward house, even though I went to it all through Young Women.
Mm-hmm.
I feel no connection to that ward house the way I did to my turn of the century
mm-hmm.
quirky.
Yeah,
quirky. You know, because
mm-hmm.
we had like. Little, there were just little nooks and crannies up in
yes.
the corners, and
uh-huh.
there was just so many fun things about that
yeah.
building that, you know, and they did have a very separate primary area.
Yeah, yeah, and this one did too. Do you remember this, Lydia? The separate?
I totally do.
Yeah, it's down at the end.
Yeah.
It even had its own... I don't even know if Alethea is quite old enough, but I was in the generation that went to junior Sunday school, and it had its own lectern and its own little stand and
yes.
everything down there.
And it was very permanent.
And a sacrament
yes.
table.
And a sacrament table.
Yes,
and I remember
yes.
they always came
yeah,
down.
They were getting sacraments.
Yeah.
Here.
Do you remember that?
It.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
before the Casada.
The whole upstairs was the primary, and there was
okay,
a primary
yeah.
section, and then it, like when you went up the stairs, left went into the primary section with the classrooms and this meeting area,
yeah.
and right went into the nursery area.
Yeah. And that's how my 33rd ward is. The primary is downstairs, and it's almost the whole downstairs belongs to them, and it is awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, it is just awesome. And they hang up stuff, and they can leave it there, and they even had a thing where, like, they have, like, a little pocket for every kid. It's a Salt Lake ward, but it's a kind of an inner city ward. And every kid has a little pocket, and they just put everything for every kid, and you can come if you miss a week. Your stuff from, your little handout from last week is there. But nobody bothers it, partly because it's downstairs, and it's in the primary area, and it's locked. Yeah.
I was in the Santa Monica singles ward for, like, 3 years, and
uh-huh.
every Sunday, or every time we had a social event, it was in the gym. And it was impossible to hear
yeah.
each other. And I just wonder, like, maybe it's the one, it's the Santa Monica. So it's further, it's off of Sawtelle. Anyway, so I wonder if people would have a better social experience, especially singles, if there
oh.
were, like, I was filled with anxiety. People would come over and interrupt. You were just, it was just like
yeah.
craziness in the gym all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah.
And that's adult, you know, young adults talking. So I think the same thing kind of carries on into.
So maybe we wouldn't have this crisis of men not marrying in the church if
yeah,
you blame
exactly.
it on marriage. The gym, that's what it is.
That's
the gym.
I could have been married.
I'm married by now. Lisa.
I was just going to say, I love the gym.
Yeah, and you know what? There are a lot of women who do, and I do concede that a lot of women use it.
I've been teaching dance and yoga classes in our gym for like 4 or 5 years. Every
yeah, and I think that, it, honestly, I have to say, that is awesome. But if for some reason basketball became illegal or something in the United States, would we continue to build chapels with gyms so that you can do yoga?
No.
That's my point.
Right.
Yeah. The Unitarian would be good for them. Or at least they could buy up all of our old chapels. Right?
Yeah.
So I think that there is something to that approach. That's a feminist way to handle it. You know, I think it's great. Except that I would really just like to have the chapel or the gym in the back and away from the chapel.
You.
Okay.
I'm totally with you.
Yeah, and it's okay if you don't agree with me. Good. Yeah. Okay, I think our time's up.
Oh, and I also,
one more.
Nikki isn't here, but she would love to tell you about her chapel in Emmett. It's also one of those old buildings with all the... And I guess they're getting rid of all the stages. They got rid of their stage.
Well, you know, I mean, I thought about that. I even thought about that in conjunction with this, because, well, who does road shows? I mean, we're on Broadway. We don't need stages. Right? Well, I'm torn too.
Memories of the stage.
I know.
But she's still like singles ward, still do like goofy talent show type things. Like stages are still used for things, even if it's not road.
The talent show. Yeah, we have a taekwondo black belt in our.
Do you?
The bridal dress fashion show.
With
the modesty clothing.
Well, and in my ward, we got to have it for gospel doctrine. So you know, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's it. Thanks.